Next week marks 20 years since President Ronald Reagan was shot.
It was about 2:30 this afternoon. President Reagan was leaving a speaking engagement at a Washington hotel when shots rang out. One bullet hit the president in the chest, one hit his news secretary James Brady in the head. Two law enforcement officers, a Secret Service man, and a D.C. policeman were also seriously wounded. The president...
Mr. Reagan moved out of the hotel door. He waved. Then the shots rang out. Pandemonium broke out.
The assassination attempt launched a day of confusion and drama. While doctors worked to remove the bullet from President Reagan's chest, his senior advisors struggled to keep the government on course. Vice President George Bush was unavailable. He was flying back to Washington from Texas. The Reagan crisis managers gathered in a secure place, the Situation Room in the White House basement. Today, for the first time, we can hear a recording of much of what was said in that room. The excerpts offer a rare glimpse of a government in crisis, and they make clear the weight of events on officials such as Secretary of State Alexander Haig.
Yeah, I think the important thing, fellas, is that these things always generate a lot of dope stories, and everybody's running around telling everybody everything that they can get out of their gut. And I think it's goddamn important that none of that happens. As long as he's conscious and can function.
That's right. The vice president's in an Air Force
just
plane.
Just point out to you that the president is not now conscious.
No, of course not.
The tapes were made by Richard Allen, President Reagan's national security advisor. His essay about that day and selected transcripts of the 20-year-old recordings appear in the current issue of The Atlantic.
When we went downstairs shortly after 3 o'clock, I thought that this would be a very special time, and it would be really important to have an accurate record. And although tape recorders are not permitted in the Situation Room because of the sensitivity of things that are discussed there, at that moment, this special incident required an accurate record.
And no one else remarked on this?
Well, I put the tape recorder right on the table in front of everyone, and there was no surreptitious taping. This is not a secret tape. In fact, it's depicted in photographs, and everyone could see the tape recorder in any case. It was important to have that record.
Those in the Situation Room included Treasury Secretary Donald Regan, White House Deputy Chief of Staff David Gergen, Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger, and White House Counsel Fred Fielding. Secretary Haig, a well-known rival of Richard Allen's, was a force throughout the day, sometimes a controversial one.
See, the important thing is that everyone knows that there is no problem here, that we're all where we should be, and the government is going as usual.
First thought was that perhaps the president wouldn't survive, and then all of the implications of that, with the vice president on a plane in Texas, a long distance away. The second thought was this or could this have been part of a conspiracy? And then when we got some news about the positions of certain Soviet assets at that moment, there was a larger number of submarines off our coast that day than normal. And we had to figure that as part of the puzzle until we studied it and recognized that it was March 30th. And it was a monthly changeover. So while those, some were leaving, some were coming, it appeared momentarily that this was a somewhat unusual circumstance, and it just increased the level of question.
There's a search for a football.
There is a search for the football, but it's merely a matter of opening a door and getting the duplicate football out.
Yeah, we have a football here, do we?
Right there.
Al, don't elevate it. Be careful.
Absolutely.
Football is, in effect, the series of nuclear release codes in time of great crisis. The question is, who would be authorized, obviously, to utilize the information on the cards that were in the football?
Little was known early on about President Reagan's condition. Chief of Staff James Baker and the presidential counselor, Edwin Meese, were at the hospital. Officials back in the Situation Room continued to focus on national security issues. Secretary of Defense Caspar, or Cap, Weinberger.
Yeah, I have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs coming on, Jones, now in just a second. And I'm going to tell him to get alerts to the Strategic Air Command and such other units as seem to him to be desirable at this point. Not to come on here, but
kind of an alert, Cap?
That's a standby alert. Just a standby alert.
You're not raising ready.
No.
Why was that so important that that message get out to the public? Because there seemed to be a lot of confusion about that. And
it was important that there not be any talk about increasing the level of alert. No one wanted the information out.
Now, who's speaking on this next section?
This starts out with a rather technical thing, is that the president can pass the baton temporarily. That's Fred Fielding talking to me.
He's the counsel.
He's counsel to the president. Right. So Fred says, we're preparing that right now toward the eventuality. And Haig leans in and says, that's what I was going to ask next.
That's what I was going to ask next. What are our legal...
No, it's being prepared right now.
That's to pass the baton to the vice president.
On a temporary basis, and it passes to him in writing from the president until the president rescinds it.
Has somebody gone into the Eisenhower precedent on this? And also
that's what this is. That's why I keep it working on.
Okay. And then I think we need that from a public relations point of view.
Well, we may not want to put it out.
No. No, Dave, the things that you want to make note of are, first, precisely what happened, notification to the vice president, assembly of the key crisis cabinet, presentation of continuity of command on the...
Fielding is talking about the 25th Amendment.
That's correct.
Which allows for a president to temporarily place power in the vice president.
That's correct. But the vice president, in this case, wasn't available, so it was not an option. And then began some further confusion, not on the part of everyone involved, but on part of some, or perhaps one, about what that succession would be.
Is he under sedation now?
He's on the upper.
He is on the upper.
So the helm is right here. That means right in this chair for now, constitutionally, until the vice president gets here.
I understand that.
Secretary of State Al Haig is saying, constitutionally, the helm is right here, meaning in this chair where he's sitting.
Fred Fielding and I exchanged glances at that moment, and we knew that it wasn't accurate, but there was no point in challenging the statement. There were more important things to do, and there was no need to provoke a quarrel, because at this point we still did not know what was going on. We hadn't identified Hinckley, so we had to wait, and we didn't want to go down a side alley about who was in charge of anything.
President Reagan never formally transferred power to Vice President Bush or anyone else. That didn't stop Alexander Haig from addressing reporters in the White House briefing room, declaring that he was in control. But Allen's tapes, recorded in the Situation Room and the frenetic corridors of the White House, make clear that until now, we've only known part of what happened next.
Did he walk in up here?
Yeah,
he's up there now.
Oh, Jesus Christ Almighty, Almighty. Why is he doing that?
Richard Allen and Alexander Haig on their way to the White House briefing room. More of my interview with Richard Allen tomorrow.